The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Major Spoilers theme song!
The Major Spoilers podcast is on the air. On the air. The Major Spoilers podcast is on the air. On the air. Podcast.
Interesting.
I'm Matthew.
All right,
Rodrigo.
We are into the main show now. Hello, everyone. You missed a fantastic discussion on creepy AI eyes, as well as Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman. So if you want to get into that conversation, you need to go and become a silver level patron, patreon.com/majorspoilers. You also get access to the VIP live chat, which we did this past Saturday. It was very engaging. We had a lot of people show up. We even had the great Nate O, who hopefully is doing okay as the hurricane hits Florida, join us with his live mic and was able to ask a couple of questions. So you can go and listen to that as well. And we'd love to have you over there on our community. It's growing. We've got a lot of fun people over there. One of the things that happens when you become a gold level member, you get access to that VIP live chat, and we give you some discussions on what's going on behind the scenes at Major Spoilers. You know, money, promotions, you know, other things that we're thinking of doing, projects that are in the works. We give you some more behind the scenes stuff for that. So you do want to check that out. This week is, of course, a general chat episode. So if you are wondering why the intro is a little bit different, it's because we're just talking about whatever is on our minds. This week, though, we have a bunch of questions coming up later in the show from our dear listeners, just like you, who asked their questions over in the Major Spoilers Discord server. Matthew, I'm guessing it's you because it's now September and the movie came out on digital in June.
You gotta be that guy.
Everything, everywhere, all at once.
You gotta be that guy.
I'm just assuming you didn't put your name next to it. I have to use logical thinking and say who would want to talk about everything, everywhere, all at once. Probably Matthew. So Matthew, what did you think of it?
I loved it. The kid apparently had seen it already and didn't tell me. So when we were watching it, I kept getting that sort of, I'm watching to see what your response is.
Mm.
But, you know, there were moments in it where I literally laughed out loud. And that does not happen very often, especially in a movie that's not actually meant to be funny. But, oh my God, I just loved that whole thing. And then, of course, when the twisty part kicked in that you don't necessarily want to spoiler for anybody.
You mean the whole part about the multiverse?
No. No, the part about who the actual villain is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, who's the bad person?
Whoa. Yeah, and I'm just like, that is truly amazing. But, of course, you know, I'm sitting here and I keep remembering people saying, well, there's like no bankable stars in this movie. I'm like, there's freaking Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah.
Well, there's also, what's-her-face, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Right.
Yes.
They've got from Big Trouble in Little China in there.
Short Round is an American treasure.
Tell me that you don't, how can you not say that this movie doesn't have bankable actors in it?
And of course the moment where Ke-Huy Quan stands up and I was trying to poke at my wife, I'm like, you recognize him? And he stood up and then took his fanny pack and started swinging it, and I whispered in her ear, "No Time for Love, Dr. Jones," and she was like, oh my God. So yeah, that was really, really neat. I liked just that whole thing from top to bottom. And of course the running gag with the googly eyes slowly, slowly, slowly building throughout the movie. I just felt like the whole thing was really, really wonderful.
It's really good. You need to go watch a couple of the behind the scenes makings of, and I would encourage you to read.
Oh, I don't want to do that.
I would encourage you. You'd get a bigger perspective.
What if the magic goes away?
No, it's not like, and here's how we did this. They talk about like, okay, here's how we had to go about making sure that when we went from, you know, a dystopian planet to a laundromat planet or to rock planet or to hot dog finger planet, how we had to make sure that everything aligned correctly. And here are all the, and so that's one part of it. And then here are all the struggles that we had to go through in order to make this movie with these actors, and why Michelle Yeoh was perfect for this, because, you know, when they go to the universe where she's a big celebrity, they actually didn't have to recreate anything. They just pulled archival footage from all of the stuff that she was doing. And it's like, okay, this is perfect. But they had to go through that process and they explain it. And it's really neat that, you know, this is a very small, it's a small independent film. And a lot of people will say, well, I disagree with you. No, it's less than $100 million film. It's a small film. Okay.
God, you can't say things like that.
Yeah, I can.
It
is a small, and it's an A24 film. So, you know, it's an independent film. And for everything that they were able to pull off with the resources that they had and the capabilities that they have, it's a great film. And if you want to hear more, I think Rodrigo, you watched it too. Rodrigo and I talked about it back in June on the Major Spoilers pre-show. So
you get I think you get 2 stars just for casting James Hong. James Hong is an American treasure. Anything with him in it is elevated. But the fact that this movie is just as good as it is just stunned me. And when I remember first hearing about it, they were like, Awkwafina is in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really, really, and I don't mean this as a dig on Awkwafina because I love her work, but I'm really glad that Awkwafina did not play the role that Stephanie Hsu did, because it was like a different sort of interaction that I feel like we would have gotten with Awkwafina.
Sure.
And I feel like she would have been a character who was more abrupt, and I feel like it would have changed the whole nature of the movie. But man, good film. The kid gave it 5 slices of meatloaf on their letterbox, and I think there are only 5 or 6 movies that they've done that for. Of course, there was Go Kaiju 10th anniversary, and I think there was Charlotte's Web. So there weren't like a whole lot of things that the child will give that kind of record to. Oh, and something with Harry Styles. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah.
Cool. Rodrigo, have you watched anything lately that has blown your socks off?
Probably not since Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Do you have socks?
I'm not wearing socks right now, so clearly something happened along the way. I have been watching Over the Garden Wall.
Oh yeah,
on repeat, because that's how my wife watches TV. She will just watch something she likes 1,000 times back to back to back to back. Until it has become a physical part of her body.
Yep.
And then she'll only watch it 150 more times.
Yep, that is my youngest son with Gravity Falls, Amphibia, Big City Greens, Legend of Korra, Avatar The Last Airbender, just like nonstop playing. So much so that my wife hates it. But I'll walk in and I'm like, oh, so what episode is this? And my youngest will say something. And then I'll turn to my wife and say, oh, is this the episode where this happens? And she's like, no, of course not. This episode has this happening. And it drives her up the wall that she now knows all the minute details of all of these shows.
Yeah. That's luckily, Over the Garden Wall is a pretty deep show. Definitely visually, right? It kind of walks through a type of Americana that is not what you usually see.
Mm-hmm.
I think most of the stuff that you see when people are hearkening back to something, it doesn't go prior to World War II type stuff. It's like at most 40s, 50s, 60s stuff. But Over the Garden Wall has a much sort of older aesthetic. It's like 1800s, 1910s kind of thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of kind of visual foreshadowing. So if you watch it all the way through the first time, you go back and watch it, you're going to notice a lot more things that aren't necessarily like, aha, if I had seen this, then I would know. It's not like that. It's more like you see things that are echoing other things that happen later. You see sort of visual cues that then when you go back and see them later, they sort of recontextualize them. Definitely there have been times when my wife gets on something and it's not my favorite. I'll still watch it over and over again because fortunately I went to film school, which is hilarious that that's like the main way in which film school has helped me. Is that now I can watch something over and over and over again and then just spend more time analyzing it and breaking mm-hmm. it down as mm-hmm. opposed to being bored to death and exploding. Because as I mentioned before, my job, like my day job, often involves watching the same stuff over and over again because I work with some people who have autism, and that tends to be a thing that is pretty common. A lot of time when my clients get on something, then I have to watch it lots of times as well. So, you know, if you ever really want to talk about Home Alone 2, we can get into it.
How are you liking Amphibia?
I haven't started that because unfortunately, Gloomhaven was free on the Epic Store. This is not a callback yet, but when Top 5 comes out, you'll hear me bemoaning Gloomhaven. But yeah, I haven't started anything new. I'm still watching She-Hulk and Rings of Power and Los Spooky. So that's kind of now a thing where they like come out on like, I think She-Hulk on Thursdays and the other two on Fridays. So that kind of feeds my TV watching. So I haven't started anything else new.
So Nick over in the Discord asks, so how do you all like She-Hulk? I like it fine. I think it's fine. I think that, again, for an older generation, this is going to be like, you know, if we're trying to do the elevator pitch, it's like, oh, superheroes meets Ally McBeal. Gotcha. Because that's exactly what the show is. And I enjoy it. I never was a big fan of Ally McBeal, but I see what they're doing, and I enjoy what they're doing with She-Hulk. I think it's a lot of fun. I think it brings up a lot of questions. Everybody in the house is enjoying it. I don't hear any complaints from anybody in my house. Now, there's other people that have a very hateful dislike for She-Hulk, but I think it's fine. Rodrigo, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I like it a lot, actually. I think... what's her name? Tatiana Maslany.
Maslany. Yeah.
Yeah. Does a great job. She's very watchable. Was she in Orphan Black? Was she like the main
character? She was the orphan.
So everybody who was watching Orphan Black has been saying this all along, but yeah, it's great. Like, she does a great job. There are times when the CGI She-Hulk spikes me into the uncanny valley.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely a thing. And I recognize that. You know, a lot of people are like, I can't watch this show because the CGI is so bad. And I'm like, in that instance, I definitely get it because sometimes it does take me out of it.
But on the plus side, at least it's television good. Right. Which is not what we can say all the time about some other shows that Matthew and I used to talk about that used heavy CGI and it all sucked. At least here, this one is good, passable to very good.
This is an instance of kind of a situation in which this show actually there's lots of ways in which this show is not helped by being an MCU show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because when people come to this from any of the Avengers movies, Even some other Disney Plus shows, they have this expectation of things are going to look a certain way, things are going to be a certain way. You know, if you make jokes, they have to be, you know, smothered in between two action sequences. And it's not doing that. And I'm like, I would love to see a like a chart of what people like which Disney shows or Disney Plus Marvel shows, because a lot of the people complaining about the stuff that you see in She-Hulk, I'm like, do you not remember that this all started with WandaVision, which was like explicitly doing riffs on sitcoms? Like the first Marvel Disney Plus show was a show in which we did riffs on sitcoms for the first like six episodes. You know, like, I know that maybe the last handful of things you saw were Falcon and the Winter Soldier and Moon Knight, but they don't all have to be like that. Because again, the way that this all got started was with WandaVision. So I would like to see if people are like, which are your favorite Disney shows or Disney Plus Marvel shows? I'd be willing to bet that a lot of people that don't like She-Hulk didn't like WandaVision either.
Probably.
It's like the only through point of both of those crowds is Loki. I think everybody liked the mix of like universe building and
silliness
and jokes.
Yeah.
In Loki, but everything else has either been too superhero like Moon Knight, or too funny like She-Hulk.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Matthew?
Have you watched a nice balance?
Had a nice balance, yeah.
Have you watched the She-Hulk?
Yeah, I love She-Hulk. And, you know, I do need to correct you. Alan Gabeel came out in 97. This is a riff on John Byrne's 1991 sensational She-Hulk revamp. And there are definitely elements from the comic books.
Yes, from the comic books. But if you're trying to get it into people's heads about how do you smash these two things up, it's Alan Gabeel meets She-Hulk.
Nobody knows who Ali McBeal is anymore. But more importantly,
well, they don't know who the 91 run of John Byrne's She-Hulk is either.
I do.
I was like, oh, yeah.
Don't. I just told them.
It's like, hang on. Let me get into this elevator. Has anybody here.
Have you ever heard of any of this?
Yeah.
But the thing about She-Hulk that I really enjoy is the fact that the humor doesn't feel forced and it doesn't feel. Like, a lot of times, this is the thing that really bugs me about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Okay, so we're on a spaceship. We're fighting an evil purple alien. And Peter's like, hi, I'm Peter. And Doctor Strange says, I'm Doctor Strange. And Peter says, oh, we're using made-up names. You're making a joke at the expense of one of the parts of the fabric of the story that you're adapting. These characters have weird aliases, and you just got to roll with it. You can't make like these jokes and have them work for everybody because the people that like them, I feel, aren't necessarily connecting with the material in a way that is going to make that joke actually stand out. But they did like half an episode on the guy who makes the costumes for superheroes. That to me, I thought was brilliant because then you have that thing of, oh, well, we can make our spandex jokes and we can make our jokes about Captain America's butt. But we're also doing it in a way that in-universe makes sense and doesn't necessarily kind of demean the idea of people running around in their underpants and punching each other in the hallway. So that's neat. And I feel like just everything out of Tatiana Maslany's mouth is gold. And I swear to you, I don't know if it's true or not, but I feel like the line, I will kill for you, Megan Thee Stallion, had to be an ad-lib. Sure. Because it's such a great line and she's so excited. And I don't have necessarily a problem with the CGI. I feel like my biggest problem is that the greens that they're using don't always read green to me. And I'm not used to an orange She-Hulk, but that's also, you know, that's something where you're just like, I feel like Steven's explanation of TV good is kind of it because we've seen things that are worse. You know, I don't know if you guys, for some reason, my wife is into La Brea on NBC, which she describes as kind of a big dramatic land of the lost. And the CGI in this is just abysmal.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think people should be
horrific.
So the biggest problem is, and we need to move on because there's a lot of questions here, but, the biggest problem is when they're using the Bruce Banner Hulk in She-Hulk, they're using the movie assets. Yeah. And they didn't go through all the hard work to create a She-Hulk movie res version of that CGI model. And so side by side, they fall apart. And then, as you said, in a couple of other places, it falls apart that way as well. Yeah. Give them another year, give them, you know, another $100,000 or more. And you could have something that looks like Bruce Banner Hulk, but then people be complaining about, oh, she doesn't look perfect. I need to have her look at her skin needs to be smoother. So there's that. Anybody watching Andor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What'd you think? I've watched the first three episodes. Here's my youngest son. My youngest son and I enjoy watching television together. That's why I mention him a lot. My oldest son is either working or doing soccer at school. So we are the two that end up when we come home from school, having that hour and a half to watch stuff. He has really enjoyed everything Star Wars. If there is a Star Wars nerd in this house besides me, it is him. I can just do a beat on a song and he'll go, oh, why are you doing the Princess Leia song or whatever? He knows these things. We started watching Andor in the first episode. He's like, oh, this is boring. And I'm like, yeah, well, let's just watch the second one and see how that happens. The second one is the shorter one of the three. And he's like, please just turn it off. Can we just do something else? And we got in the middle of the third one. And he's like, I hate this. This is the worst ever. And the problem is it's a very slow paced show. And there's a reason why they released the first three together, because they really are a mini movie that you need to kind of watch to get the whole through line and seeing how it's all put together. So yes, if you don't have time to watch all three together, and understand that the story takes place over three episodes, I think people are going to hate Andor. I thought it was fine. I didn't have a problem with it, but the youngest, who should have been a good target for this, despised it. Rodrigo, what about you?
I thought it was okay. I liked it well enough. It has a lot of like interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The character or characters aren't like rebellion freedom fighters yet. So you get some stuff at like the Empire using corporate like security firms to sort of administrate the planets that they have control over. Like, to me, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
It also allows you to have bad guys with a sort of different
definitely a different aesthetic. Yes.
We see, scrappers. We see like the culture of this kind of like very out of the way planet that's technically within the Empire, but not really. We see, new droids, new things are like tools that people use as opposed to like blasters and stuff. So that to me is very interesting, because Star Wars is a huge universe, but tends to neglect that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And for good reason, because it's an action adventure universe, right? It's
right.
Like nobody cares about whether somebody's using like a Sinar systems engine versus something else. Like that's, nobody cares, right? Definitely not when you're sitting down to watch something. Maybe later you go to Wikipedia and find all that stuff out.
Yeah. Well, I like the fact, that unlike Book of Boba Fett, this world is heavily populated.
Right.
And that's not something that you found in Book of Boba Fett. So.
Right. There's sort of this, as we find more and more, there's sort of like this, a culture to this world. And that's like a culture that then interacts with the oppressive, like corporate cop, like company that is supposed to be keeping the peace there. So it's, there's a lot of stuff here that's very interesting to me. As far as the story itself, I watched these three episodes, and by the end of the third episode, I'm like, oh, this was all a prelude to whatever the show's actually going to be.
Yep.
And it was fine. I liked it. But also I'm like, okay, I have to be prepared for the fact that the rest of the show may not actually be like this.
Yeah. I would say that they could have told the same story in two episodes instead of three,
Definitely.
But, it was still good. Stumerak says, ooh, do you think mainstream streaming networks like Netflix, Disney Plus, etc. will add a running chat feature to new show premieres? I mean, I think that's something separate. Like, hey, join our Disney Plus Discord channel in the Star Wars subgroup, in the Andor subgroup of that. And when Andor drops on Tuesday or Thursday at 12 a.m., we will have a live chat for everybody then. I mean, they might. I think that all of these networks do encourage people to do sit down and live chats. Doesn't Netflix have a feature where you can do a group watch?
Amazon has watch parties. I don't know if Netflix has that.
I thought Netflix had one at one time, but yeah.
They did
at one point. I don't think they do anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
That probably tells you all you need to know.
I think that's how they should do it. Mm-hmm. Basically, they should be like, okay, Andor is dropping. Let's get Diego Luna to host a watch party.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can specifically go to that, and it'll be like a controlled and curated place where you can like post stuff to it, and it can be like hosted. Like, I don't know that they'll just have like just running commentary, because that's something that people might choose to have running, mm-hmm. and it might ruin the experience if people start immediately pointing out like,
oh, problem,
foreshadowing for something spoilery later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also find that, I mean, to me, having a running commentary or a chat window open or whatever that's going on at the same time, I don't have any problem with that if people want to do it. To me, I would not want that to be my first viewing, is to watch it with 13,000 other people, all with a chat log running or a live person chatting and going, oh, you know, in this scene, it was really raining that day and we were all soaked. It's like, I want to watch the show first, and then I'll watch it again with a chat party for somebody like that. But I would definitely not ever do something like that for a premiere of a show.
You know, lots of people do that.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Because sort of in the same way that we operate, right? We're critics, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, what comic book should I read? Oh, I usually like the stuff that Matthew likes. So if Matthew likes something, then you can be like, oh, I'm going to pick this up.
Right.
People do that with YouTubers and mm-hmm. other people like that.
Twitch streamers, yeah.
You can go to the Twitch stream and watch something along with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you basically get their opinions as they go. Mm-hmm. And then after that, people will be like, oh yeah, I'm going to go watch it like by itself. Or they might be like, nah, this wasn't all that interesting or funny or whatever.
Yeah. Jarmo says, if any, which upcoming thing, comic book, movie, game, etc., are you looking forward to the most? Matthew, what are you looking forward to the most, pop culture related?
God help me, this live action wild cards thing that they keep talking about.
Oh, because the Orson Scott Card thing?
No,
that's not Orson Scott's Card. George R. R. Martin, that's right.
George R. R. Martin, yeah. Wild Cards was the thing that I really enjoyed of Martin's shared universe. And when Game of Thrones broke big, people were like, hey, we're going to do Wild Cards. We're going to do more Wild Cards. And I'm like, but don't do Game of Thrones with, you know, guys with superpowers. And that's what they did. And so I, you know, kind of have this love-hate relationship with every adaptation. So I'm really hoping that, you know, somebody will finally get it right, because it's one of the rare places where magical realism with superpowers totally worked, totally immersive universe, really, really well thought out. And then, of course, you know, it devolved into nihilistic nonsense at the end, but I don't think anything has ended well since about 1985. So
HBO might actually get me to come back. If it shows up on HBO Max, but something that was announced and confirmed and has got a whole bunch of people involved in it, including David Cronenberg, is a Scanners series in development at HBO. David Cronenberg is producing, giving his blessing to it. It's got William Bridges is the writer and executive producer and showrunner in the series. He is one of the minds behind Black Mirror and Stranger Things. So that could be really interesting. We're not going to see it for some time, probably 2024 at the earliest. But I think an adaptation of that fully set in the Scanners universe could be a lot of fun. That's probably the only thing that over the last couple of days that I've looked at that has popped up in my radar. And I've said, ooh, that's something I want to pay attention to. So we're still a few years away from that. But that might get me to resubscribe to HBO Max, providing they don't pull a plug. So, Rodrigo, what about you?
I think I've talked about Sea of Stars before. It's a game that visually borrows heavily from games like Chrono Trigger.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very interested in it because it really just nails me in that nostalgia. The stuff that I've seen of the game looks good. It's kind of that like isometric sort of pixel style, but like modern pixel style, right? So the sprites are actually very high resolution and everything. It looks fun. It looks really good. And it's one of those things where I'm like, this is a game that I'm looking forward to. I'm just waiting for them to either say that it's like super duper delayed or not happening, or for someone in the company involved to do something terrible that becomes public. And then I'm like, welp, I don't know if I'm doing this anymore. So that's why I try not to look forward to video games.
Yeah.
But Sea of Stars is supposed to come out next year. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
On the flip side of that biker geek asks, what is a non-geeky nerdy thing that you're looking forward to? Which I think is really hard because I was sitting there going, well, I'm kind of looking forward to the next Rivers of London book. No, that's kind of a nerdy geeky thing. Well, sure, I'm looking forward to this TV show. No, that's also a nerdy geeky thing. So I think the only thing that I can answer is I'm looking forward to going to bed.
Yeah. When you think about what non-geeky things am I into, it's like, even if you're a sports person,
yeah, that's
kind of nerdy in its own way.
Yeah.
So you might say something like that. It's like if you're into sports, probably in the same sort of primal way as Steven, it's like my wife is she's trying to get healthy. So we're kind of only eating out once a week. So I'm like, I'm already looking. I'm like, okay, what are we gonna eat on Sunday?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to pizza. Like,
and she's cooking more, and the stuff that she's making is great. I had a bison burger today; it was nice. Really good.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's just something about like, hey, what restaurant are we going to?
Mm-hmm.
What am I gonna order?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's probably a really really boring thing to look forward to. But I'm like, am I going to go to Jersey Mike's and get a sub Mike's way?
Oh,
yeah. Matthew, good. What about you? Anything nerdy, geeky that you're looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to the point where I can replace my van at a price that makes sense, because I'm not
good
giving
luck.
You $27,000.
Good for luck.
A 20-year-old car.
Good luck.
Here's the thing.
Ridiculous.
Right
Steven,
now,
stop it.
I'm just saying, car prices aren't going down anytime soon, unfortunately.
They're not, but here's the thing. Here's the weird thing. This is the weird inverted tourist capitalist thing that we live in right now. New cars are cheaper than used cars in a lot of ways.
Depending on what you're looking for. Yeah.
Depending on what you're looking for. So if you were ever going to buy a new car and you have to do it now, now would be the time to do it, not because new cars are
providing that they have that new car in stock. That's the other thing too, right?
I mean, we are trying to buy a new car, like we are,
and yeah,
we don't have it yet because they haven't built it yet.
Yeah,
like they're just sitting there waiting for like the tungsten for the chips or whatever to come in.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
the tungsten was used up.
We were very lucky when we got Mason's car. We were really lucky in that we got it at like a redonkulous price. Like it was so low that had I not bought the car, people would have said, why didn't you buy that car? It was sub $10,000, and it is in excellent, it is in excellent condition for a 2006 car, but it is in, I mean, it's got less than 60,000 miles on it. And it's just like, and it's like $8,000. And they're like, okay, well, we probably should have maybe thought a little bit more before we ran out and bought this car. But if we were trying to replace his car now, the cheapest car that we can find in this town is $25,000. And that's the cheapest end. And that is also for a 2017 car. And it's just like, you've got to be kidding me. There was a 20, we saw another like a 2008 car the other day that had like a $30,000 sticker on it. And it's like, cars are in such demand right now. Yeah. So it's good. So when I say good luck, Matthew, I'm honestly wishing you good luck because, it is so hard to find
you. Are being a sarcastic.
Oh, I'm not.
Steven contains multitudes. I think he can genuinely wish you good luck and also savor your angst at trying to buy a car.
Speaking of savoring, last week was Hamburger Day, National Cheeseburger Day.
Oh,
can you tell me, there was a survey that was done. I don't know who this was done by. But can you tell me
Hamburger Incident?
It probably was the best burger chain rankings per state. Rodrigo, would you like to take a guess on what the top hamburger chain is in the state of Washington?
Top chain.
So hold on before you do, I'll help you out by giving you another state whose state starts with W. Here's okay. Wyoming. Wyoming had Hardee's number one.
Okay.
McDonald's at number two, Wendy's at number three, Sonic at number four, and A&W restaurants at number five. Conversely, Wisconsin had Culver's at number one, A&W restaurants at number two, Burger King at three, and McDonald's at four. They didn't have a fifth ranking, which is interesting because in Washington state, they only have four ranked burger chains.
Right.
Which one is number one?
I'm going to take a guess. I don't know if this is right, but I think it's one of the better ones. Like they're clearly not including like sit downy places like Red Robin.
Yeah, Robin's not on this list.
Although, man, if it's Washington, there's like the Native Son one. Is it Dix?
It is not Dix.
Is Dix on the list?
Dix is not on the list.
Okay. That is surprising and kind of unfortunate because it is a local thing. And it would have been nice if it had made the list. Yeah,
that may be
Whataburger.
It is not Whataburger. It's not Whataburger.
No, there's no Whataburger here. Yeah. I'm going to guess it's A&W.
It is not A&W. And I was very disappointed when I saw this for Washington State. It's McDonald's.
I mean, there's tons of McDonald's around here.
Vermont has Five Guys is their number one. Utah has In-N-Out Burger in their number one. South Dakota has Wendy's at their number one. Washington, McDonald's
nothing
at number
wrong
one
with McDonald's,
Burger King at number two, Wendy's at number three, and Carl's Jr., which is the same as Hardee's at number four.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots wrong with McDonald's, but not any wronger than any other burger.
No. Of any of the other four that they had listed. No, there's
yeah.
nothing.
McDonald's is
no, I mean, it makes sense. I would be they're specifically ranking the burgers.
No, it's
or
just
is it
burger
like a
chains.
Restaurant
it's
by,
best burger
like
chain.
How much money it makes?
No, it's just best burger chain.
Kansas
ranking.
Is Sonic.
Kansas is not Sonic. Sonic no, is not Sonic. Even in the top five.
Yeah. No, Sonic.
Would you like to take another guess, Matthew?
No, because it's Sonic.
So number one in Kansas, which is surprising, although maybe not surprising, because they just opened up one of these restaurants in Ellis, the city of Ellis, 2 weeks ago. A&W restaurants is number one in Kansas for burgers. McDonald's at number two.
I don't have an A&W within 50 miles of me.
McDonald's at number two, Steak and Shake at number three, Wendy's at number four, and Burger King at number five.
Steak and Shake is okay if you're fine with like a really thin, crispy burger.
Yeah.
That's the thing is like when you look at
crunchy burger.
Yeah. Starting with A&W and then going into like Steak and Shake, it's like, and definitely Five Guys, it's like those are pricey.
Yeah.
Like you're starting to get into like expensive burger territory. So like I wonder if like in Washington state it's not like that they were just like mainly pulling like urban areas. Like if they just went down to Seattle and they're like, what's your burger of choice? It's like, well, McDonald's, because you can get you can get two burgers there for like a dollar.
Yeah, for $5.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder if it isn't just like how hoity-toity any given place is like in like, again, if they did Seattle, there's this huge divide of like, what burger place do you go to? Most people in Seattle, probably McDonald's because it's cheap. What place do you go to? Hoity-toity people in Seattle is like, we don't eat burgers. We just have kale directly shot into our eyelid.
Yeah. Zavith has taken the time to not be vegetarian. So they made homemade burgers the other day. And I was just like,
nice.
Yes, child, make burgers for father.
Zimsy asks, where is the best place? Where is the place to eat out? where is the place to eat on a night out? So Rodrigo, with your Sunday coming up, where will you be eating, do you think?
I think we're going to try to go to sort of a sit downy, but like a kind of bland restaurant, like an Applebee's, right? A lot of the time when we go out, we go to like taco trucks and stuff.
Oh yeah. Our taco truck is closed on the weekends because the kids were complaining that they didn't have weekends like their friends. And the parents were like, okay, I guess we'll close on the weekends so we can do family things like white people do.
Sure. So, last time my wife went to the taco truck, it wasn't there. So we're worried that it's like picked up and left or something.
Man, we used to have a lot of food trucks in this town, but they're all scattered now. They're not here. We have our taco truck, which I love, but I never get to eat there because the only time I really get to go eat out is on the weekends, and they're not there. We used to have this pizza and wings truck that was phenomenal, but then everybody complained that the price was too high, so the guy's like, well, fine, I'm just going to go over to Johnson County and sell my stuff there. Sure. And people are like, yeah, this is cheap. We love this.
That's the thing about food trucks is they're restaurants that can leave you.
Yeah. 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 So we missed out. And I forget we had a chicken one that's not here anymore. I'm sad. Matthew, where is the place to eat on a night out?
There's a place in downtown Topeka that is schmancy pricey, but the food is like excellent and it's all weird, like deep fried mac and cheese and cheeseburgers. And they have, you can order a shake with Fruit Loops in it, and they give you a straw that is made of Fruit Loops to drink your shake. And if you go upstairs, they have a bunch of video games and like vintage pinball. They have 4-player Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles up there if you want to go. It's called The Pennant. And I don't know if it's any type of like chain restaurant or anything, but dang, it's my favorite. And if we go there with the whole family, I'll spend $100, which is why I go there like twice a year.
Yeah.
But I don't go out. I have food brought to the house, man.
We will go do, usually we will find, because if we go out, we're in a different town. So we will usually find either a noodle place, a Thai restaurant, a sushi place, Korean barbecue. What's the other one that we do? Yeah, those are about the 4 that we will try to hit. Although, funny story, not really for this show, but we were in Wichita a couple of weeks ago for a thing. And afterwards, we were like, we were hungry. And so we went to this noodle place, and it was really crowded, and it was really small. And my youngest son does not like crowds, and he doesn't like things where people could be looking at him. Hmm. So I was like, okay, what's another place that's close by? And there was another place not too far away, and we went to it. And they had some really good food, really good people in the establishment. It was really nice. It was a bar. It was also a gay bar. And that was something that nobody expected when we walked in. And we're sitting there, and my wife is like, I think this is a gay bar. I'm like, meh, okay, the food's good. The service is nice. Let's just eat. And so it's like,
as long as it's a gay bar and grill.
It is. Exactly. It was a gay bar and grill. It was good.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, it wasn't just a bar. I didn't take no, they had good food. We had, like, I had a Thai pizza. My son, the youngest son, just had like chicken fillet or something of that. It was really good. My wife, I think she just had fries or something. She wasn't super hungry, but yeah. So it's like, yeah. I took my 11-year-old to a gay bar. So there you go.
Like, I think this is a gay bar, and it's like, I don't care what the owner's name is, Gabe, Stewart, Jack. It doesn't matter. I'm starving.
That's kind of the, it's like, I don't care. They got food here and let's eat. Jimbo Fett says, Italian or Chinese food? Matthew?
Chinese for me, usually. I make Italian food at home that is better than most of the Italian food restaurants in town. So I would go Chinese.
Okay. Rodrigo?
The options between Italian and Chinese?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
100% absolutely Chinese food, because I can't have marinara sauce anymore.
Oh, boo.
And also, I kind of can't have Alfredo sauce anymore. We went to one of our nights out. We went to Olive Garden, and I was like looking to the menu, and I'm like, yeah, there's kind of nothing here I can eat.
Yeah.
But I still tried. I still tried, and it went poorly.
Yeah. Nope. Chinese food all the way here, in case you missed me talking about sushi or Thai food or any of those other places. So,
sure.
Ryan R. says, do you and the whole group think you will ever check out 1D&D? Well, we were able to successfully dodge 5th edition. So maybe 1D&D. Who knows?
I mean,
I'm going to end up with the books. I'm going to end up with the books regardless, because Wizards of the Coast will send them to us.
Yeah. I are we ever going to get into 1D&D? Is like, what that takes is for one of the people that run games for Critical Hit to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So it's like,
somebody has to have an idea.
Like, are you guys ever going to get into like the Dresden Files Fate stuff? It's like, if somebody decides,
I've got a story, but I just haven't done it yet.
Yeah. If somebody decides that's what they want to run, we will get into it. I've got stuff for lots of systems that I would like to run. None of those are D&D though, so that's relevant.
Lagnus, I don't know if this is even tangential. How do you rate the complexity of D&D 4E with splat books on a scale of 1 to 10?
A scale of 1 to 10.
I don't understand the question.
I don't either.
Like the
The so-called Valdorogs at scale.
I'm not familiar with that, but the question I think is, when you look at the complete 4th edition canon,
mm-hmm.
So with splat, what splat books means is the book that came out for each power version, right? So arcane power, divine power, so on and so forth. When you look at that, how would you rate it in complexity from a 1 to 10 scale, right? I would say D&D 4th edition is solidly a 7. It is pretty complex, but actually not that complex. When you look at games like Exalted 3rd edition, Shadowrun, like the upper ceiling of complexity is huge. Whereas like with D&D, you're always, with 4th edition, you're always dealing with about the same level of complexity and just getting more and more options within that level of complexity.
Mm-hmm. Gian says, what do you do to fight depression? This is a tough one, right? Because, I think that there are different levels of depression, right? So there's depression that happens on a cloudy day where it's just like, oh man, I'm in a mood where I don't want to do anything today. So the answer is, tomorrow will be sunny and everything will be different, right? Then you can get into some depression issues where you broke up with a loved one, or, you know, some financial difficulty has happened, and that can put you into a funk for quite some time until you can get out of it. And then, of course, you have the type of depression where you want to hurt yourself or hurt other people. And so that's kind of a big, long scale to look at. I am not afraid to say that I've been into some very dark places over the last 4 years. And what I would say is, certainly call 988 here in the United States. That's the new suicide prevention hotline. You just pick up the phone, 988, and there are people there to help you if you're into those really, really dark places. But for me, if I notice that I'm in a depression state on any level of that scale, I try to identify what is triggering it, what is, and then just kind of analyze, is this a temporary thing? Is this a long-term thing? Is this the thing that I need to go and talk to people about? And then work my way through those kind of situations. So there is not a simple answer to fighting depression, and everybody is going to deal with depression differently. But I would definitely say, if you are into the I need to hurt myself or other people kind of depression, then I would really seriously encourage you to call 988. That's here in the United States. I don't know what it is in other countries. I'm sure whatever your emergency hotline number is, the equivalent of 911 in the United States, I'm sure you could call your emergency responders and talk to them about what you're going through, and they can put you into situations like that. I have dealt with friends who are in super chaotic, I'm going to harm myself states, to where I drove them to a help center. And then, they dealt with some things there. I went home with them. I had to confiscate their guns that were in the house and hold on to them for them. So yeah, it's a tough thing. But for me, I try to identify what is the trigger, what can I do about it, and identify whether this is a short term or a long term issue. Mm-hmm. And that usually takes care of it for me. But my solutions are not, I'm not a doctor. I'm saying this is what works for me. That may not work for you. Rodrigo or Matthew, you have something to say?
I think the hardest part is that the most useful things to deal with depression are the things that are hardest when you have depression.
Yeah.
And there, one of the members of my household does have a clinical depression diagnosis. And what I found has helped for them is, A, they got help. I mean, there is a doctor that they go and they speak with, you know, actually speak to the person and say, these are the things that I'm dealing with. I know that there's medication that she's taking, actually a couple of medications. I wouldn't say that I'm anywhere near depressed, but I know that when I started having some real issues in 2019 with a lot of the stressors and a lot of the things, you know, dealing with my particular job in the middle of a pandemic, it did help to talk to my doctor, and it did help that he gave me medication. I have a Wellbutrin prescription, and I think that it's important to not be afraid of something like that, to say, could it be chemical, or could there be something that could help me to deal with this? Because the difficulty, again, is you can say all day long, you need to get out, you need to exercise, sleep well, eat well. These are all good pieces of advice, but they're not necessarily pieces of advice that everybody can do while depressed. And, you know, even saying go see a doctor and get help can be difficult, because you have to find, you know, a doctor that you can interface with.
Yes.
And you have to deal with the horror that is American health insurance. But
yeah, I would also
absolutely reach out for help.
Yes. And don't be afraid, because that is one of the things that, you know, the most recent Legion Clubhouse episode, it's clear that there is a person who is really going through a very tough mental time. And the advice is, oh, he's just got to walk it off. He's just got to, you know, work it out on his own. It's like, no, it is okay, especially for men to say that they are not okay and go and get help. So, guys, if you're listening and you're feeling in a funky state, it is okay to go and talk to somebody. You know, certainly a medical professional or 988 is a good place. The nice thing about medical professionals, if you're afraid to admit that you may be depressed and need help, that stuff's confidential. So, you know, it's not like your doctor is going to call up all your friends and make fun of you or anything. So, yeah, you know, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to go get that help. Rodrigo, do you have some thoughts?
Yeah, I left Kansas.
There you go.
No, Kansas is good. The only thing that I really don't like about Kansas was the weather. I have dealt with sort of like what they call like state of life depression, where it's like, just because of where you're at in your life, there's kind of nothing you can do about it. Especially if you're like actively working to change your situation, like that's all you can really do. So what was recommended for me is to focus on the things that I like doing, right? If there are aspects of my life that I didn't like and those couldn't change, then spend time focusing on other things, like, for example, writing or running an enormous D&D campaign, or making weird wrestlers on the WWE games, or finding new restaurants to go eat, or finally scoping out all of the Mexican stores in the area, and seeing if there's anything nostalgic that I can eat, mostly eating. You know, it doesn't make the other stuff go away, but part of the issue with depression is that it gets you in a state of mind, and if you can't get out of it, it continues to have that stress on your body. And it's, you know, it gets you into a downward spiral. So having, basically sort of forcing yourself sometimes to go out or do something you enjoy or something else that breaks you out of wherever you're at can be very helpful. Again, you know, everybody I'm not clinically depressed, right? I'm actually, if anything, I'm anxious. So when my situation changed, that depression pretty much went away, right? Like nowadays, I'm, especially after the last election, I'm like a lot less like depressed and anxious, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of
nowadays definitely. So not that, I mean, there's still stuff going on, right? But but I'm lucky in that sense, in that I'm not naturally clinically depressed. So once my situation changed, most of that stuff went away, and I was able to look back and say all of that, a lot of those things that I had attributed to my own inadequacies or inability to do something actually weren't that, right? It was just sort of where I was, where my career was, where the country was, where my employers were, all these things that were sort of forming this oppressive web of things. And once I was out of it, I was like, oh, yeah, it's like, sure, I was depressed, but it's okay. You know, it's not my fault that all of that stuff was going on.
Yeah. All right. So there you go. Hopefully that helps out. Again, 988 in the U.S. Feel free to pick up that phone if you need some help. Flipping into making a little bit lighter, but maybe Rodrigo, you already answered this. Lagnus asks, what is your favorite way to take a break from the outside world and just enjoy yourself for a bit? For me, the outside world is how I enjoy myself, right? I go out, take a walk, listen to some audiobooks. But I think when he means outside world, I think he means like the things you were just talking about, Rodrigo, the president and the economy and all of that stuff. And sure. The thing that I would suggest is, and I've got to say, I was very upset when TweetDeck, which is an app on the iOS, when they shut it down and was like, hey, just go and use the web version of TweetDeck, because TweetDeck for me was always open and I was always on whatever people are talking about. It's always in the corner of my screen. I could always see what's going on. And since they've shut that down and school started back up for the kids and everybody, I am so busy with other things that I don't even remember to go to the website to look at Twitter and TweetDeck and the socials. So sure, turning the social medias off has been a blessing, to where it was like, I woke up today, was halfway through my day, and I was like, oh, you know what? I haven't even been over to Twitter, and I need to, I know somebody's probably waiting for me to respond to them. And I opened it up and I was like, oh, here's all this stuff that I haven't even seen for like 5 days. This is great. Sure. So that, you know, shutting off the social media is great. And then just personally, if I need a relaxing thing, I'll go out on our back porch on the hammock and just kick back there and listen to some audio books or podcasts or whatever. And just enjoy the fall weather. So, Rodrigo, did you have some other things so that you can take a break from the outside world?
I will. Sometimes it does really, it gets to me, and I need to sort of watch some, quote unquote, mindless things, but things that aren't going to get into that stuff. So there's two things on YouTube that I started watching. One is dog grooming videos. So I will watch somebody, you know, bring in a giant like old English Shepherd and just go through the process of getting that animal clean, and like clipping their nails and like shampooing their little face mop and you know, shaving their paws. And it's, you know, it's downright relaxing, unless, even if the dog is having a tough time of it, you know, they're not actually hurting the dog. And, you know, it's like sometimes watching a dog be slightly distressed is kind of funny. You know, if you've ever seen a video where they groom a husky, they're hilarious because huskies cry out loud for anything, like for very small reasons. They're very dramatic dogs. So being groomed, they just sit there and like wail for the full time, which is, you know, it's cute. And the other thing is, I've actually gotten into a show on YouTube called Drawfee, which has been around for a long time. It was a College Humor thing, and then when that thing happened where College Humor got bought out and then they were gonna get like dissolved by their parent company, and College Humor sort of rebought itself, like Sam Reich, I think the College Humor guy's name is, and basically plugged it to its Patreon. The Drawfee group like butted itself out and created its own Patreon and its own schema. There's, you know, there's goodwill between the two, and you'll see College Humor people show up on Drawfee, but it is just like usually four artists shooting the stuff and drawing weird stuff and stuff that they're interested in. All the hosts are anywhere from slightly to much younger than me. So, you know, sometimes they'll be like, oh yeah, I was looking this stuff up that we're drawing, and did you know there was like this other thing? And I'm like, I knew that because I'm old. And I wanna go on YouTube and leave a comment, but I'm like, oh yeah, also this episode came out 6 months ago. Like there's no way that anybody has an answer to that already, or that they care to have that answered by now, right? But yeah, it's like, it is just like, it's like visual, or it's like watching artists that are very good and very accomplished, but the audio is like pure shit posting, right? Just like memes and references and stuff, and it's just like this constant thing. And it's like, I've actually found a few pieces of media because they are into them and they'll just reference it, and I'm like, okay, I need to go check out what this is, and you know, I actually end up liking it.
That's okay. If you like the dog grooming, you might want to also check out the power washing and the lawn mowing videos, where people are just like, oh, I'm doing free pressure washing for this guy, and look, he has a sidewalk and a driveway, and that kind of stuff.
I've also been getting into wood spinning videos.
Oh yeah, those are fun.
And when things are real dire, hoof health videos.
Oh, man.
So, like, people that go in and they're like, this cow's gait is wrong. So they, like, grab the hoof and start shaving it off. And sure enough, there's, like, an abscess or something. And it's real gross and bloody. And they get into it and they clean it. And they get this, like, basically big, like, day glow sole and, like, glue it to the cow's hoof once it's, like, cleaned and disinfected. And I'm like, that cow has shoes now.
Yeah. If you like the wood turning.
It gets real bad. That's what I end up
with. If you like the wood turning, may I suggest Frank Howarth, H-O-W-A-R-T-H. I think he's in Washington. He may be in Oregon, but I'm pretty sure he's in Washington. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He's in Portland, Oregon is where he is. He does some amazing wood turning stuff that I think you would get a kick out of. Like, he'll like, oh yeah, I figured out this method to, properly turn a ball, wood lay the ball. And it's just like amazing how he does this. And then he does this, he's doing it as art, but he also like, does bowls and a bunch of other things and creates these complex patterns of stuff. So I would go and check him out too.
Okay.
Matthew, what do you do to relax and get away from the outside world?
It depends on what else is going on, but lately I have actually found an online video editing software that allows me to sort of kind of do the same things I would do in Photoshop, but I can do them at work because it's something that is browser-based. Now, anything that you do in Photoshop takes about 15 times longer, but there's something almost comforting, like zen, about that. And what I'll do is I'll like download a picture of some, you know, idiot superhero from 1964, and I'll import it into this software, and I'll be like, okay, this is what I would do, and it would take me about 5 minutes if I had Photoshop right now. And then I spend an hour or 2 hours literally going in and cleaning this mess up pixel by pixel. And for some reason, I mean, I can spend a whole day. I literally spent something like 18 hours on one picture the other day, simply because it made me feel good, made me relax. I'm like, okay, I have made this picture, and now I'm like, hey, I may have the only good picture of this idiot superhero, and no one but me, and you know, I text friends, no one but me and pretty much Mella will know for sure. But it's one of those things where I'm just like, yeah, that for some reason just shuts my brain off. Especially right now, I'm training, so I'm having to be in teacher mode at work. And we've just switched to 10-hour shifts rather than 5/8. So not only am I in teacher mode, I'm in teacher mode for longer. And it's just exhausting.
Fighting Gobbler says, I got into comics from the Dreamweave publishing run of Transformers.
Dreamwave.
Those books, Yes, Dreamweave. Dreamwave. Yeah. Those books seem to be regarded poorly due to their treatment of the Transformers and in part due to the mismanagement and ill treatment of the staff and the people at the top of Dreamwave. I still remember these books fondly, and they have a really special place in my heart because they are my gateway into comics. Do you have any books or runs that are generally regarded poorly, but you still hold dear? X-Mutants for me, I suppose. Even though it's horrible today, I look at it and I'm like, nah, this is crap. But probably that. Matthew?
Most of my favorite stuff. Omega the Unknown, which Marvel canceled in 1978 at 10 issues, is an absolute favorite. And of course, there are tons of, you know, little weird one-shot books or books that should have gone longer. One of my favorite things was Gods for Hire from Hot Comics in about 1986. I'm one of three people who has ever heard of it. And if you're one of the other ones, third person, and then we'll combine into one and 3D man and take over the world.
Right, here we go. Do you have anything that is generally regarded poorly, but you still hold on to dearly?
Yeah, totally. I started reading comics in the 90s, guys.
That's true.
Did you read Dreamwave books?
You read Dreamwave books.
I never did.
Was it Transformer stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I wasn't.
Well, Dreamwave also had other stuff, but
I wasn't reading Transformers comics. I pretty much haven't, because I actually, similarly, I watched the original cartoon, and then I got into Beast Wars when it came out. And anytime I interacted with the greater Transformers community, like, everybody hated Beast Wars.
Truck, not monkey.
Yeah, nowadays you will find people that, like me, either got into, I didn't get into Transformers through Beast Wars, but a lot of people that did get into Transformers through Beast Wars, and you also find that, like, a lot of now, canonical lore, especially about the metaphysics of being a Transformer, actually come from Beast Wars. So it's kind
all
of
that
been,
stuff about
I think,
the spark.
Yep. All that stuff about the spark and the matrix and all this other stuff. It has been at least, maybe reluctantly embraced because it did a lot of work in that section, right? Mm. It's like, in the same way we were talking about Andor, and it's like, you know, maybe it's slow and boring, but like, man, are people going to look at it and be like, I really like all those metal clanging scenes that actually like create, like let you visualize what a culture cares about. That's kind of what Beast Wars accomplished. But I still have a place in my heart for like old Spawn comics, for all of those like immediate fly by night comics, like
Amazing Hero
and the Creed.
Yeah.
God.
And
you never got past the seas, did you?
The Max.
The Max 666. Yeah.
And people like the Max. What
do they?
No.
Yeah, the Max had a cartoon.
I mean, the Max was a thing. People,
yeah, I know.
People really go back and forth on stuff from the 90s. And if you lived through it, you go back and forth on stuff from the 90s, right?
Yep.
It's like, does anybody care about the Pit? Probably not.
God, I hope not.
But you can find some Pit crossovers where the guy he's crossing over with does something cool in that book.
Yeah.
Lots of having started reading at a time where comics was really just going full throttle into some very specific places, really, I think, warped my brain. And for a long time, I didn't understand that that's not how comics were normally, that people were trying out, again, these like very specific lines of like darker things and edgier things and sort of vacuous edgier things, like visually edgy without necessarily having something to back it up.
Right.
I don't hate it. I think there are lessons there, and there are like a lot of people make fun of like the visual stuff, but there's visual stuff in there that has stuck around.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Fighting Gobbler says, side note, with Dreamwave going out of business, these books are seemingly lost to time unless you have access to the physical copies. Is there an archive of defunct media somewhere that would allow me to go back and reread these? I'm not going to give you an actual website to go and look this stuff up, but I would say if you want to go back and read those Transformers Generation 1 comics from Dreamwave, do a Google search for Read Transformers Micromasters comic book, and you will find an archive sites, a couple of archive sites that...
Be very careful. They are not safe.
You got to be careful on some of them. Have your thing turned on. The sites that I would go to on this, the ones that I found are fine. You may see some questionable ads pop up, but for the most part, everything else is good. So
here's the thing about media from 2004, though, when it comes to comics, I literally popped onto my my buy-in website where I do online auctions. Complete run of Transformers G1 Dreamwave 10 book. Cover price $2.99 and get a complete run for $49.99. So basically you're paying $4 a book or $50 a book for 10 books. I mean, I don't know if I would trust a lot of those archives because not that I know for sure, but I've heard that there are times where, you know, you go in and you'll click on something and it will say it's a link to a weird or lost or forgotten comic. And what it is actually a phishing link that takes you someplace terrible.
Yeah. So, if you do the search that I gave you, and the very first result will be fine for you. The other thing is, he did say, unless you have access to physical copies, it seems like he was looking for a non-physical copy version of these. So there you go. On
I maintain my statement that there are no safe ways to do that.
No, and that's why I said I'm not going to point you to any specific sites because copyright's still in existence. Boys and girls, and you want to be safe. It'd be nice if some of this stuff would all show up on a digital format like Comixology, but it's not. So you either do without, you go and you pay $5 for per issue per comic, or you go borrow it from a friend. Hey, here's some feedback from Ryan R. as we wrap up this show. He says, just started watching Alice in Borderland on Major Spoilers recommendation a week or so back. And with a second season coming, I figured it was a good time. Quickly felt like I recognized the female character who joins them and seems to know a lot about the game. IMDb, of course, said that she is from Super Sentai Go Busters. So if you're a fan of that, Matthew, you might also, or other Sentai fans, might want to go watch Alice in Borderland because she is kind of the quote-unquote love interest. She's also... For those of you who were reading the manga with us last week, she's the girl that shows up at the end of the book and pushes the button together. That's who he's talking about. Also really enjoyed the first episode. So of course, thank you for persistently saying how good it is. Major Spoilers. There you go. You are welcome. And if you enjoyed that and you want to get in on even more fun stuff, be sure to visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/majorspoilers. A little value for you, a little value for us. When you join patreon.com/majorspoilers, connect your Patreon account to our Major Spoilers Discord server and get access to a bunch of other secret channels that are only available to our Patreon fans. So go and do that. patreon.com/majorspoilers. We will be back next week for a regularly scheduled programming. Something Miles Morales is what it says in my show notes. Apparently, there's supposed to be Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse 2 opening in theaters October 2nd, 2022.
I hope you're like maintaining this schedule somewhere so that you can like go back and reference it and just go like movie by movie and then have like the planned time and the time when it actually came out.
Yes, yes, yes. Also, I see here November 4th. November 1st episode of the Major Spoilers podcast, the Flash something something, because obviously there's a Flash movie coming out, and November 8th, a Shazam 2 something something, because there's a Shazam 2 movie coming out. Also, November 15th, a Black Panther something something, because we were supposed to get a Black Panther movie. And of course, in December, an Aquaman something, because the movie releases December 16th, 2022. So, look at how the end of the year just wanted to make fun of me. Also, I have Ghostbusters crossing over, so we have a Ghostbusters thing coming up in a couple of weeks.
That's why I say don't plan.
Nah, you got to plan.
Show up.
Got to plan. You got
to
plan.
You got to plan to a certain degree.
Yeah, how else is the universe going to laugh at you if you don't do that? Anyway, we'll be back next week to talk something, something, Miles Morales. Why? Because we know that you love comics, we do too, and we will talk with you soon.
Fat Dick's revision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic bookstore guy knew, he kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Stark Raven, it's like a man of iron. I might not be surprised to find that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being in the Middle East with a King Santo and soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2022 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.